morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and my guest today is none other than Linda Brim. Wait, you're not on. Okay.
There we go. Good morning.
Yes, and Linda is the co-owner of Brim's Farm and Garden, a longtime supporter of KMUN and Dig in the Dirt in particular, and we're going to talk about heritage trees. And the word heritage brings up ideas of something that transcends generations and lifetimes and has a special significance. And so I did some reading about heritage trees, and there is a worldwide movement in many, many, many countries to preserve trees of special species, of particularly large size and age, for the future. There's a sense that trees are important.
They are. And in the case of the tree program that Astoria was endowed with money to plant 200 trees for Astoria's 200th bicentennial and Pacific Power and Light's 100th centennial. On Earth Day, April 22nd, there were a lot of young trees that were planted. And the term heritage trees has been thrown into the mix. But in this case, we're talking about baby heritage trees that will someday be looked back upon. Hopefully 100, 200 years from now, will have documented their birth and how they came to be institutions in, you know, schoolyards and on private property, as well as city-owned properties.
Okay, so let's talk about how were the tree species varieties decided upon?
That is a very important question. They were actually juried. Kristen Ramsdell from the, I have to get this right, she is the community assistance forester for the Oregon Department of Forestry, was instrumental in reviewing all of the trees that the original committee
suggested.
Mm-hmm. And then she married the tree selections to the site. And that is so important. The whole reason that Pacific Power is so supportive of tree planting, the right varieties, not just any tree, but getting the right varieties that are going to be friendly to power lines above and underground, not encroach on sidewalks or in parking strips where people need to open their car doors or to mature into a tree that's going to obscure traffic, line of sight vision for traffic. And trees that have year-round beauty, it can be bark or persistent fruit. You want a spring flower and fall color, you know, an interesting shape, and they have to really fit into a pretty tight box as far as, you know, getting a thumbs up in a whole bunch of different SKUs.
Now,
so Kristen did a fabulous job.
And how many different kinds of tree were planted?
Kinds like of trees. Ooh, let's see. We did some maples, crab apples, several different cultivars of crab apples. And where we had open space, we did parodia, Persian parodia down by the Indian Head, and some linden down at Customs House. Boy, you put me on the spot, Ann.
Okay, what are the trees at the Custom House that are in the two rows?
Okay, those, that is going to be, I'm so excited about those. Those are crab apples, two different varieties of crab apples, chosen for disease resistance and their size. Beautiful spring flowers, they're going to be fragrant. Persistent fruit that is not messy. Unfortunately, crab apples get a bad rap in people's mind, because the old crab apples that were available to us even, you know, 15, 20 years ago had absolutely no disease resistance unless you got lucky and found a variety that...
And they looked horrible.
And they got mildew, fire blight, scab. They were just ratty. They might have been good you know, for a year or two, and then they just started declining because they did not have disease resistance. They weren't appropriate for our maritime weather. And the ones that were selected are just tough as nails. Now, I have to say that I was disappointed in the Royal Raindrops because they got powdery mildew. But that's not the end of the world.
Which is the, is that a kind of crabapple?
It's a crabapple that has a serrated leaf. It's almost, the leaf almost looks like a paper bark maple leaf. It's palmate and it's not roughly serrated, but it's lobed. And that particular tree really took a hit because it rained and rained and rained. And
gee, like today.
The term disease resistance does not mean it's bulletproof. You know, you dump months and months of rain on any leaf and it's going to struggle. So those trees are looking a little rough, but the good news is...
Well, not the ones at the custom house.
Oh, they look
Bob
fabulous.
And I have been watering.
Yeah. But watering isn't going to solve powdery mildew. If a tree is stressed, obviously it's going to succumb quicker than a tree that's being well cared for. The trees up at the PP&L site have...
In Warrington?
No, the PP&L site is the substation between Alney Avenue and the turnoff that goes to the old Young's Bay Bridge.
Oh, got it, over there. Okay.
The one at the top of the hill, you can, it's a real interesting lot to look at because you can see the top of the hill tree where water runs off quickly is the worst looking. And it really got the worst powdery mildew. And then the other crab apples in that stand, as you go further down the hill and they're getting a little bit more wind protection, look a lot better. But they're all showing signs of new leaves coming on, so they are recouping and they have enough oomph in their root system that they're still putting on some new leaves, and those have stayed clean. Now, I haven't looked at them in the last couple days, but there's also in there some ornamental cherries, Royal Burgundy, which is an upright cherry that's a smaller cultivar. Those look fabulous. They're really hanging in there. They don't have any cherry shot hole disease, which is a fungal disease that causes a little dot on the leaf. And then as the fungus progresses, the hole drops out and people mistake it for a bug. But they do not have that. They look really, really good. When I was watering up there one day, I did notice... what's been really cool about this whole process for me is it's forced me to learn a lot about trees. And boy, I have. I've really put my head down and done a lot of studying, taken a lot of classes, and really gotten better updated on what's out there. And there's a lot of improvements in the nursery industry as far as what's available for homeowners and commercial sites. But one of the interesting things that came up that I never expected, and I should have because I've seen molehills up there, but I was watering. I'm using the city's 150-gallon tank with a gas pump that we installed, and pretty good pressure comes out of that tank. And so, and I'm always doing this on the fly. I'm giving them a good amount of water, but I was really working hard at making sure that there were no voids. And
you mean that there was even water all the way
around? Even water all the way around, and there was a cave-in. And this is a really important thing to do when you first install a tree, is check your backfill with water, with a garden hose. And I just concentrated the water and went around and around and around, and the cave-in did happen. I wasn't really sure if the cave-in was caused by... improper planting. I'm almost certain it was a molehill. And moles are notorious for getting underneath established plants or anywhere you've been digging, because you've opened up the soil and all of a sudden they're smelling the wonderful bugs that want to come and infiltrate all the, you know, if you've turned sod under, they start coming to eat that stuff. And then the moles move in to want to eat the bugs that are eating the organic matter. So it's really good to check around the vicinity. If you have moles, you know you have runners, you know, make sure that if you're seeing some stress in your trees, it's not from being undermined by mole runners that cause air pockets, and then the trees do not hold water. So
what do you do when you have a cave-in then under one of those trees?
Well,
we haven't had that happen yet that we know of.
And that site at the customs house doesn't have the mole problem that the PPNL site does. What I did is I just kept scooting water back down into the hole. You can never get to the bottom of it because that whole area is just a tunnel system. So it's an ongoing thing. You know, you're going to have to make sure that, you know, and there are going to be pockets where those roots are going to avoid. And
oh, because there's air.
The roots won't grow into an air pocket. That's another interesting thing that I discovered was the J. Frank Schmidt Company hosted an urban forestry conference. And they showed us, when our trees came, we bought the trees from Frank Schmidt. And when the trees came, they came in these pots that are grids, and they're an open air pot. They're very labor intense if you're going to hold them over because they do dry out quickly, but they don't allow the roots to girdle and grow in a circle.
Oh.
So when you go to plant them, you don't have to do all the major root pruning that you do from a plastic pot or a pulp pot or a wood box because it's a natural process. They don't stay in those pots very long, but while they are in those pots, they grow beautifully and they thrive. And the natural process of those roots staying lateral without circling is huge when you go to plant.
It's going to be a much healthier tree.
Yes, much healthier tree.
Mm-hmm. And so if people are wanting to plant now,
with the rain, it's actually a big advantage. generally, if you're going to plant in the late summer when the soils are really, really dry, you have to have a lot of water available. You have to be willing to dig a hole, hydrate it thoroughly. I mean, literally fill it with water, let it drain out, and then make sure that your backfill, when you've dug the hole out, you want to make sure that your backfill is also equally hydrated. And then you've got to water that tree regularly,
and that
2 inches a week.
2 inches a week
minimum.
Which would be like 5 gallons, 10 gallons.
Well, it depends obviously on the size of the tree,
mm-hmm.
and whether you have clay soil or sandy soil. If you have sandy soil,
twice a week.
Yeah, you're probably looking at upping that. And then the other thing you have to monitor is, you know, that also fluctuate. That's a guideline. That's a tuna can basically. A week. If it's hot, which we haven't had, or if it's windy, if the site is exposed to a lot of wind, then you've got to up that. And the tree will tell you. You know, you'll be able to tell if the tree looks a little wimpy.
I noticed two trees of the ones we're speaking of by the high school, Astoria High School track have almost no leaves.
Not a good thing.
It's not good. They look bad. I was running, and then I realized, oh, my God, I know what I'm looking at.
These,
because I wasn't involved with these, or I haven't been involved with these trees, and I didn't walk over to them and look at them, but I'm thinking they're under some stress.
Well, what happens when a tree loses leaves early? This is too early, obviously. They don't have a chance for the temperature trigger, which causes the hormones that suck all of the sugars from the leaves down into the roots. That's a natural phenomenon that happens every year and is really important for next year's leaf growth. So if the leaves fall off prematurely, either from stress from underwater or
too much wind.
Yeah. Or let's say somebody accidentally got overspray on them from a chemical herbicide or something like that and the leaves fall off, which the chemical obviously is going to do some damage as well, but physical injury. If a tree branch was broken by vandalism or
lawnmower
or just hot sun on, you know, in a point in time when that tree was so dry that, you know, our poor trees were exposed to those one or two hot days we had this summer. And if those trees weren't watered, they really fried. So then the tree goes into winter with very low sugar stores in the root system. And then spring comes and there just isn't enough energy to put leaves on and the tree dies. So, you know, in some cases you just can't reverse what can happen if the trees aren't monitored properly and taken care of when you see a problem developing. You've got to catch it at the wilt stage, not the leaf drop stage.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about protecting your trees, how to pick a heritage tree, and then what to do if you see one doing badly. If you want to join the conversation, call 503-325-0010. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Linda Brim.
Out on the green grass, Uncle's got a big fat handlebar mustache. We keep it mellow in the shade. On a little grassy hill, cold dew on the vodka, picnic basket mix, a glass of lemonade. We rock peacock feathers in denim backpacks, rock a big belt buckle on my hat, it keeps you mellow in the shade. Well, Jimmy plays squeeze box, flat on the green grass, smoking on a hash pipe, a glass of lemonade.
Well, that was Medium Troy from Eugene, giving us some kind of reggae music. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Linda Brim, the co-owner of Brim's Farm and Garden, longtime master gardener and supporter of KMUN, and we're talking about heritage trees. So I know that people are always on the hunt for a new tree, something wonderful to put on their place. A lot of people in our listening area have lost trees, either in the 07 storm or last year with all the snow.
Yep.
And they may be thinking, I need a wonderful tree on my place. From my perspective, I wouldn't plant a crab apple of any kind. Maybe in a public place, okay, but not at my house. I would think that would be pretty much not, I don't have enough place. I would want something more
meaningful. Now, why would you rule that out? I'm just curious. Why?
I don't really see it as something that has year-round interest. And I guess it doesn't have food.
Okay.
And it's not a conifer. I don't know. And
okay.
I don't know.
So that's really important to make your parameters hard and fast, because when you start looking, there's so many options. Mm-hmm. And you really get, you know, just kind of pulled in a bazillion different directions when you're looking at varieties. So I think what you just did verbally, a person should sit down and write down what they're looking for in, you know, in each season. You know, it may boil down that you absolutely need a conifer because you need evergreen. And, you know, if you are willing to give up the evergreen to have a flower, then, you know, take it a step further. Do you need functionality? Do you absolutely need to be able to harvest something from that tree? So that may scoot you over into the fruiting category.
Mm-hmm.
Height and width is super important. So not only assessing what you need from that tree, but assessing the site. What does the site have to offer? Is there water? What's the soil like? Do you have retaining walls? Do you have utilities underground that are going to be an issue when you go to dig? Also, let me throw in another thing, and I know we talked about this in a previous show in the spring. Before you dig, call 811. It's a utility locator. They come out within 48 hours, and they will mark the site as to where your utilities are so that you can easily locate your tree. You don't want to be finding out after you've put a shovel in the ground that you're right on top of a sewer line, water line, or power line. And that's free. It's a free service. So 811, it's easy to remember. You need to do that first. And then when you start your research process, looking at what the mature height and width is, and these are generalizations, you know, within a few feet, but always allow a little bit more. Always, you know, especially if you have a really cozy site with really good soil, allow a little bit bigger. If you're right on the ocean, or if you have lean soil, and you know you're in the fog belt close to the ocean or the river within 5 miles, then you want to probably fudge on the side of a bigger variety. If you need height, then you can probably go maybe 5 feet taller, because your tree is going to be stunted by the wind, the fog, the sandy soil, the lack of organic matter in the soil. And those types of things would allow you to maybe put in a bigger tree.
Well, 5 feet difference isn't that much.
No,
is it?
It isn't. And that's because we're talking about smaller trees. We're not talking about horse chestnuts or, you know, the big old Norway maples. We're talking about smaller trees. And that is the trend. That's generally what people are looking for, unless they've got acreage. They want smaller trees. They want trees that can grow in pots. So that's generally what people are looking for these days. And that's not to say that there aren't a lot of fabulous large trees out there. But
you need to have room for them.
You have to have room for them.
I mean, people have been, since the 07 storm, people have been freaking out about the trees around their house. And trees just keep coming down.
Yeah, they do.
And trees that are perfectly healthy are coming down because people are now fearful that the tree's going to land on their house, which a lot of trees did.
Well, there's just, yes, that's unfortunate, but... it's money well spent to have an arborist come and take a look. You may have a tree that is beautiful and growing very well, but you know, it may have a split top in it. There may be some issues with the way the limbs are attached to the trees. You know, an arborist can help people a lot in assessing whether or not a tree needs. Everybody can run a chainsaw. I mean, anybody can run a chainsaw, but you know, whether or not the tree could be managed and then saved, I think it's time and money well spent. So, you know, there's some very talented people out there that can do that for you.
I think absolutely that's a good idea. So now, even though we're having some rain today, if you've got new trees, it's not wet in 2 inches down.
Exactly. Yeah. This is going a long ways to hydrate the whole site. So what I do when I check on the trees that I'm babysitting or nurturing is I just take my toe and kick the bark away. And if it's moist, it better be really moist or I'm going to be back. If it's dry, then I'm back for the long haul. I'm going to really soak. I was gone for about a week. And when I came back, the site was just toasty. The trees didn't look wilty yet, but I knew I really had to soak them. When we had a little rain prior to that, I'd gone and looked at them, and the soil was dark and wet, but when you felt it, it didn't have any moisture in it. You could tell that it wasn't enough to really hydrate the trees, so there wasn't enough leeway there. I had to get back and at least water give them the minimum 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to realize that the canopy also will absorb a lot of water through the leaves. But that doesn't give the roots the benefit of the water. And that's where the rubber meets the road. The roots need water. So if your trees are planted amongst a lot of other canopies, you know, the canopy trees, then the tops are going to be stealing a lot of the moisture. So it's really hard to say how long this rain is going to be with us. But don't assume that this is going to suffice for water.
It blows my mind. All summer, even though it's been very wet, the soil has been very dry.
Yes.
I mean, I still watered kind of as I usually do.
I think that site that you're monitoring has a lot of sand in it. You know, that...
Oh, at the custom house?
Yes. And the ball field side...
Oh, that is so dry.
Yeah, it's really, really...
Those trees are the worst looking. The ones at Astor School look really good. They are some of the healthiest trees of the whole group.
This custom side house is beautiful.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, they look absolutely wonderful.
But Bob and I have been down there every week watering.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Although we're behind right now. We haven't.
Well, this will give you a little reprieve, but you're not off the hook. I wanted to talk a little bit about how to figure out what good trees would be to consider for your home site.
Sounds good.
There's some excellent websites that people can utilize. Great Plant Picks has been around for a long time, and it's just www.greatplantpicks.org. I'm going to put a link to these sites on my website, which is brimsonline.com, and anybody can access these. I'll have that done hopefully by tomorrow afternoon. J. Frank Schmidt has some really nice selections that they've developed and patented. And their website for finding trees, street trees, utility trees, they call them utility trees because they're power line friendly. And they work on small lots. They work in health strips. They're appropriate for pots. So that website is just a wealth of information. And obviously they're selling trees. You can also look to see who sells their product. There is the Oregon State website, which the Oregon Master Gardeners support, and also J. Frank Schmidt supports financially. And that one is oregonstate.edu/DEPT ID plants. And that will also help you assess trees and sizes. So those are just the best of the best. I think there's several others. The Pacific Power has one. It's rockymountainpower.net. And they also will be touting a lot of the plants that are useful in small sites. So I think it's really cool. I'm excited about the crab apples that we put in when I was in Billings earlier this spring. I just had the luck of being there on a really warm evening. It was 70 degrees, 7 o'clock at night, and all of these crab apples were in full bloom, and it was such a heady fragrance. And I was so excited because I know down the road when our trees get big, when you walk that alley at the customs house or go anywhere near the cemetery up on the top of Niagara, when all those trees are blooming, it's going to be very, very
Will they bloom next impressive. Year?
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
We'll get this wonderful experience next year.
Yes, but not on the large scale of a big tree. You know, obviously, get bigger, it's going to be
Although
more.
They're not that little of trees.
No, we did
I mean, they're taller than we are.
We used one-inch caliper. Yeah. So they are good-sized, which is...
So I think that what we'll do is next year, when they're starting to open up, I'll announce it. And maybe we'll have we'll have a party. We'll have a bloom-smelling... party in in the evening. Will they smell the most at night?
Well, I think it's temperature dependent.
On a warm evening.
Yes, let's hope
we have
some.
A barbecue at the custom house.
Let's hope we have some warm evenings.
We'll have
next
a block
spring.
Party. Okay. Any final thoughts?
Anybody that wants to get involved with adopting these trees, the Master Gardeners have adopted this as a payback program.
Oh, right. So if you need some hours,
if
Teresa,
you need some hours and you want to participate, we're still needing people to help monitor trees, and it's a real easy job. Next
and
year,
some
watering. Hopefully next year we'll be installing a few more trees to get to the 200.
Right.
There's
still about 60 that aren't in the ground. Right?
I believe so.
Yeah,
I believe so. So I'm not sure where we're at with that, but it's going to be an ongoing process. So.
Great. My guest has been Linda Brim, co-owner of Brim's Farmer Garden, who's a longtime master gardener. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.